This is a message for members of Thrive and Financial for Lutherans. Thrive and Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
I will end, don't ask, don't tell. That's my commitment to you.
They are literally voiceless, not yet with tongues, and perhaps even without names yet. They, too, require our most careful attention and radical support.
There are senators that have been involved with the slaughtering of innocent children. Our vice president goes to communion, and yet he has supported the sucking out of brains of babies.
One of the best insights that a guest on Issues Etc. recently handed me on the hate crimes legislation and on the whole philosophy of hate crimes legislation is this. Hate crimes legislation is faulty law largely not because it creates a new class of crimes, but because it creates a new class of victims. Now, recently, Colleen Carroll Campbell has written about this, and she said it has to do with equal protection under the law. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After a short conversation with Colleen Carroll Campbell on hate crimes legislation and the new Census Bureau report about stay-at-home moms, we'll spend the rest of today's show reviewing Dan Brown's new best-selling novel, The Lost Symbol, all about Freemasonry, with one of the four foremost authorities on Freemasonry, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Our call-in number live this Thursday afternoon, October the 15th, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. You can email us, talkback at issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at issuesetc. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
How are the babies?
Oh, they're doing well. They're growing well and keeping us up at night, so doing their job.
And I'm sure you're doing yours, which is 24/7 now.
Exactly. Especially with twins, they keep you busy. So.
Well, I want to come back to that in a minute. First, let's talk about this hate crimes legislation. You've written recently that it chips away at the principle of equal justice for all. That's a pretty broad statement. What do you mean?
Well, I'm referring in part to the Equal Protection Clause in our 14th Amendment to our Constitution, which says that all men are created equal, and they're, of course, our founding documents say that, but the Equal Protection Clause basically stipulates that we're going to be treated equally under the law. The problem with these hate crimes laws, and especially this latest one just passed by the House and kind of snuck into a different bill that had nothing to do with hate crimes, is basically that it says if you are a victim of a crime and we can find that the perpetrator had some bias against your sexual orientation, your gender, or your gender identity, which is even more nebulous, that is your actual or perceived gender-related characteristics, whatever that means, then you're, the criminal who attacked you gets a stiffer punishment than if he attacked someone else. And so basically what it does is it kind of differentiates between different forms of malice, I guess, or hate, saying that, you know, some kinds of hate are worse than others. And if you commit the same rape or murder or robbery, it's worse if you did it to one kind of victim, a victim who is a member of one of these protected classes, versus another. And I think this really undermines a very fundamental principle in American jurisprudence, which is that, and American law, which is that, you know, all are equal, and a crime against someone of one race or sexual orientation is just as serious as a crime against someone of another. And so I don't think this kind of legislation is a good thing at all, and we've seen it lead to some other problems, especially violations of various freedoms in other countries where this has really taken hold. So I think we have a lot to be concerned about here.
We have been told again and again every time this raises its head with regard to federal hate crimes legislation that these laws will not infringe upon the freedom of speech and that speech is a whole separate issue, and there's nothing to worry about. Pastors preaching from the pulpits or teaching their people in Christian congregations what the Bible has to say about deviant sexual behavior.
That's certainly the argument that's been made, but we've seen in Canada and across Europe where these hate crimes laws begin, hate speech laws often follow. And in fact, it's very difficult to imagine how this would not involve infringements on freedoms of speech, association, and religion. The law itself that was just passed in the House last week, the bill, specifically says that prosecutors must probe a defendant's, quote, speech, beliefs, or expressive conduct to find evidence of these negative views toward whatever this group is, in this case, gays and lesbians, transgender, bisexual, et cetera. So, or that vague category of gender identity, whatever exactly that means. So if you have to look into a defendant's conversations, their media consumption habits, their religious beliefs, I don't see how that can't lead to some intimidation of the pastors, religious broadcasters, and publishers who speak out on these issues, particularly in a politically incorrect way, as in opposing same-sex marriage or homosexual activism. And we've seen that not only does this have a chilling effect on freedom of speech and of religion, but it goes even further in nations like Canada, where it actually leads to explicit laws that actually target people who hold these politically incorrect views and say that that's hate speech. And you get a situation, and we've seen it again in I believe it was Sweden was one of the countries, again, Canada's another, where pastors who were preaching against homosexual relationships were actually accused of inciting hatred and of hate speech. And everyone says, well, you know, this isn't a hate speech law. That's true. But we're on the slippery slope to it, and I think it's very clear from the way the law is written that that intimidation is already beginning to take effect, whether we have a hate speech law or not, and I don't think it'll be long before someone proposes a hate speech law as well.
Well, as we mentioned just a few minutes ago, you're a brand new mom. I want to know, are you a working mom or a non-working mom?
Ah, my favorite question, yes. And you know, as any mother knows, there is no such thing as a non-working mom. So, and I've certainly learned that in a new and fresh way in the last few weeks. But, you know, that's a distinction that I think is fostered by a lot of media coverage of this kind of these so-called mommy wars between full-time working outside the home mothers and mothers who stay at home with their children. But there's a whole category of women who tend to get overlooked, and this is especially true in this new Census Bureau report, which came out a couple weeks ago. It depicted stay-at-home mothers as younger, poorer, less educated, and more likely to be foreign-born. And the spin on this report was basically women stay home with their kids because they can't really figure out anything else useful to do with themselves, which is, of course, not how most of the stay-at-home mothers I know look at their role as mothers. But if you look closely at the Census Bureau report, which unfortunately many commentators didn't, it excluded any woman who had done any paid work outside the home, anything more than a week's worth of paid work in an entire year, or any woman whose husband was not employed all 52 weeks of the year. So basically, any woman who's ever worked from home, done a little part-time work on the side, any of that was excluded from this Census Bureau report, which is how we wound up with this skewed profile of these less educated and younger and poorer stay-at-home moms. Again, doesn't mean that their job is any less important because they have fewer economic and professional opportunities, but it does tend to portray stay-at-home mothers as somehow choosing a vocation of last resort, which, again, is not what the facts bear out if you look at women who tend to squeeze in some work on the side, which is what a growing number of American women do, whether it be part-time work or work at home.
So finally, with only about a minute here, how would you respond as a new mother to this what appears to be a bias against the mom who really does want to put her kids first, even if she's working on the side or working full time? How would you respond to it?
Well, I think it doesn't really reflect the reality of women's lives. There's a lot of rhetoric, and we hear it especially from the feminist establishment, especially the more radical fringe of that establishment. You know, we have to be out there working the 60-hour week, you know, top of our game, full throttle, fast-track career. Anything less is mommy track. It's embarrassing. It's sad. It's oppressive. If you say you want that, it's only because you're deluded by the patriarchy into thinking you want that. But, you know, you talk to your average mother, and a Pew poll recently released actually verified this, a plurality of American mothers say part-time work is ideal for them, for mothers of young children, and they want to have a hand in public life, but they really want to give themselves their time and their attention to their kids. And not all women have that luxury, of course. But to treat those who have made those choices and have had that opportunity as if they are somehow victims is just basically to ignore what women say over and over they want. This is pretty hardwired into women. We want to be with our kids. We want to be available to our kids. Doesn't mean we have no outside interests, but that's a very strong desire in the vast majority of American mothers. Polls bear this out, and whether or not that desire is politically correct, really, at the end of the day, doesn't matter to the average mom who just wants a little more time with her kids.
What are the twins' names?
John Patrick and Mary Rose Therese.
Those are great names.
Thank you.
Those are great names.
Thank you.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest, a fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful, a new mother, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. We'll kiss the babies, and I hope that they sleep well for you at night.
Okay, thanks a lot, Todd.
When we come back from this break, Dr. Alvin Schmidt is going to join us. Now, we've asked him to be our guest for the remainder of this hour for a very good reason. Dan Brown has a new best-selling novel called The Lost Symbol. Dan Brown's always about symbols and hidden secrets and hidden truths and all that kind of stuff. There's some remarkable assertions. And with Dan Brown as a novelist, it's hard to tell whether he's asserting it as fact or as fiction. He likes to play fast and loose with that distinction sometimes. The new book, The Lost Symbol, has a lot to do with the Masonic roots of the American experiment and Freemasonry as kind of the religious way home for all of us, benighted adherence to things like Christianity and other world religions. So we thought, why not get the foremost expert on the Masonic Lodge in to review the book, The Lost Symbol? That's Dr. Alvin Schmidt. We'll be talking with him, reviewing the book, The Lost Symbol by Dan Brown, on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Every Tuesday, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. Issues, etc. online at issuesetc.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in Word and Sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.
Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org, click Find a Church.